Chapter 7. Up to her elbows, in soap suds and hot water, Lucille Farrell Brannan scrubbed the pots and pans in the bucket. She paused and lifted her arm, using the coarse sleeve of her homespun dress to wipe away the beads of perspiration on her forehead. Even here in the shade beneath the trees behind the inn, this was hot work on a summer day. A faint smile tugged at the corners of her mouth as she went back to her chore. Once upon a time, the fairy stories started. Once upon a time, she had been the pampered daughter of a rich man, a riverboat owner who served as his own captain. She had worn fine lace and eaten at tables covered with fancy linen. In those days, never in her wildest dreams had she thought that someday she would be little more than a scullery maid. It wasn't quite that bad, she told herself. She served customers in the inn's dining room and sometimes washed dishes, along with helping out on other household chores. It was honest work. There was nothing dishonorable about it. She and her aunt had to do something to earn their keep. They couldn't expect Bert Nolan, the proprietor of the inn, to allow them to live here for free. Besides, the existence she had led as the daughter of Captain Zeke Farrell hadn't been all that luxurious in reality. The cabins and the salon on the Missouri Zephyr had been nicer than her quarters here, of course. But her father had never gone in for a lot of fufaras and folderol. The Zephyr was a working boat, and it didn't ply the waters of the Mississippi on pleasure cruises. Everyone had pitched in from time to time, including the captain's daughter. Lucille had spent many days in boots, trousers, and a man's woolen shirt, with her long, honey-blonde hair tucked underneath a riverman's cap. She remembered the way Corey had looked at her the first time he saw her dressed in those clothes. His eyes had grown wide, not with surprise, but with admiration. Lord, she missed him. Nolan came out of the back of the inn, short, plump, and mostly bald, with tufts of white hair behind his ears. He had a mild manner and a high-pitched voice. Although he might look soft, most people hereabouts knew that he had been at San Jacinto with Sam Houston, and then later fought the Mexicans again as a U.S. Dragoon during the Mexican War.
"Come along inside when you finish that up," Nolan told Lucille. "You've been working hard all day."
"There's always so much to do," she replied.
"Yes, but it doesn't all have to be done right now," he chuckled. "A pretty girl like you ought to rest a bit between jobs."
Lucille knew the innkeeper didn't mean anything improper by the comment. She and Mildred had been staying here at the inn for months, ever since they'd arrived in Marshall, after fleeing Vicksburg with Alan and Fred Carter. And during that time, Nolan had not said or done anything to make her believe he was being forward with either of them. In fact, his chuckle and smile were positively avuncular, and that thought just made Lucille miss her Uncle Charles that much more. She wondered where he was and how he was doing. And of course she wondered as well about her husband, about Corey. The first time she had seen him, he had been nothing more than a starving, half-frozen wharf rat, eking out a miserable existence on the docks of New Madrid, Missouri. When he managed to earn a few coins by loading or unloading a boat, he usually spent them on rot-gut whiskey at Red Mike's or some other squalid dram shop. He was as close to being an utter failure as a man could be, while still drawing breath. Yet there had been something about him even then, some indefinable quality, proclaiming that under the right circumstances, he might amount to more. He had proven that when he'd helped save the Zephyr from fiery destruction at the hands of the mob, led by the abolitionist and Yankee agent Jason Gill. Zeke Farrell had taken Corey under his wing and intended to make a riverboat pilot out of him. He would have succeeded, too, if the war hadn't come along and taken away that chance. Lucille hadn't taken Corey under her wing. She had taken him into her heart instead. The romance between them had been tentative at first, but grew ever stronger with the passing of each day. She had learned about his family back in Virginia, on the farm in Culpeper County. He had even admitted his full name to her, Coriolanus Troilus Brannan, and had explained his father's passion for the bard, and how John Brannan had named all of his children after either Shakespeare himself
or characters from the man's plays. For her part, Lucille told Corey how she had grown up on the Great River, raised by her father, never knowing her mother. The passion had been there in their relationship, of course, no doubt about that, but they were both friends and lovers, and Lucille had never known anything quite so fulfilling and wonderful. Hardship had separated them, danger had dogged their wandering paths, and every time they were reunited, it seemed as if the war conspired to tear them apart again. At least, they had managed to be married during the siege of Vicksburg, so at last they could share fully the love they felt for each other. Then, Jason Gill had come into their lives again, bringing hatred and despair with him. Lucille and her aunt had been forced to flee to Texas while Charles Thompson rescued Corey from the jail cell where he had been languishing at Gill's orders. Circumstances must have sent them in different directions once again because she hadn't seen Corey in months, and she knew he would have come to her as soon as he could. She refused to even consider the possibility that Corey might be dead. Before leaving Vicksburg, Lucille had heard that Gill was very sick and might not recover. She liked to think she was not a vengeful person, yet a part of her could not help but hope that Gill's illness had proven fatal, and that even now he was suffering the torments of the damned, as he so richly deserved.
"Lordy, girl, you look like you're a million miles away," Nolan said. "And wherever you are ain't very pleasant."
Lucille gave a little shake of her head and forced a smile. "I was just remembering something."
"That husband yours, I'll wager. Don't you worry, Lucille. He'll turn up one of these days. No man in his right mind would stay away from a girl like you any longer than he had to."
She knew he was trying to make her feel better, so she smiled again and nodded. She didn't even bother telling him she didn't like to be called Lucy. She and Mildred could never repay the kindness he had shown them. They had come here to Marshall, Texas, from Vicksburg, following the same route the wagon trains had taken. Along the way, over in Louisiana, Lucille had seen the tavern, deserted now, where Gratt had kept Rachel, a virtual prisoner. She didn't know what had become of Gratt, and didn't care, as long as he didn't show up to bother her and Mildred. It was difficult knowing what to do, whether to stay here or push on farther west. Corey knew the way to Marshall, and had been here several times. He would be likely to think this was where his wife and her aunt would head after leaving Vicksburg. But Corey's ultimate goal was to move on west, to the area along the Brazos River. He had a dream in his head that he would settle there someday. Lucille didn't know much about the Brazos, but she knew Corey. He might look for her there. But if he did, chances were that he would come through Marshall first. For now, she decided, she and Mildred would bide their time. There was no way of knowing where Corey was, what he was doing, or how long it would take him and Uncle Charles to rejoin them. She finished washing the pots and pans, setting them aside in a basket to drain. Then she dumped the bucket of water and carried it and the basket back into the inn's kitchen. Aunt Mildred did most of the cooking for Nolan these days. She was at the big cast-iron stove, stirring a pot of stew. Lucille smelled fresh biscuits cooking in the oven. Supplies weren't as plentiful in Texas as they had once been, but compared to the rest of the South, the real hardships brought on by the war hadn't set in here.
"There are some gentlemen in the barroom who need tending to," Mildred said as she glanced over her shoulder at her niece.
"Where's Deborah?" Mildred sniffed in disdain.
"You don't think that girl can be bothered to actually do her job, do you?"
Lucille dried her hands on a cloth, frowning a little as she saw how red and rough they were. Life made few provisions for softness these days.
"I'll take care of him," she said.
She was used to serving drinks in the inn's barroom. Deborah Lassiter, the young woman hired by Nolan to handle that job, was seldom where she was supposed to be, when she was supposed to be there, as Mildred had said. Leaving the kitchen, Lucille went through the lobby and into the barroom. At this time of day, the place was usually empty. Not today, though. Four men sat around one of the tables, talking and laughing, raucously. Rather, three of the men were talking and laughing. The fourth man sat quietly, a reserved smile on his face as he gazed, tolerantly, at his rowdy companions. Lucille had never seen any of them before,